Intense fighting in and around Bakhmut.
The guns, the equipment is so hot because of this intensive fighting that sometimes equipment stop working.
Plus, a new law in Ukraine gives the government more control over the media.
And the council will be able to find a media outlet without a court order. That's our concern.
And later in the program, we meet a man with one of the scariest jobs I can think of. Today is Tuesday, January 10th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. First, a developing story out of Washington. A U.S. military official has confirmed to VOA that the U.S. will start training Ukrainian forces at Fort Sill in Oklahoma on the use of Patriot missiles later this month. The U.S. will train about 100 Ukrainian troops, enough to sustain a Patriot battery. Fighting remains intense in the eastern Ukraine city of Bakhmut and the surrounding area, with one Pentagon official telling VOA that the fight is really just savage. With more on the situation, we turn to the AP's Charles Della Desma.
Russia's intensifying attacks on Ukrainian towns Bakhmut and Solidar. Ukrainian officials say Russian forces are escalating their onslaught on the wrecked eastern city of Bakhmut, bringing new levels of death and devastation in the grinding months-long battle. President Volodymyr Zelensky said late on Monday, "Everything there is completely destroyed. There's almost no life left. The whole land, too, near Solidar, is covered with the corpses of the occupiers and scars from the strikes." Russian troops, alongside soldiers from the Wagner Group, a Russian private military contractor, have advanced in the region in recent days. I'm Charles Della Desma.
As we've heard, Ukraine says it's repelling constant attacks on Bakhmut and other towns there by the Russian mercenary group Wagner. This comes as a missile strike in Kharkiv killed two people and wounded several others. This report by Olivia Zolino.
A large crater in the middle of the Kharkiv village as rescue workers sift through piles and piles of rubble. The past few weeks were a bit quieter, says this local. She didn't expect something like this to happen again. Two women were killed and others were wounded, including a 10-year-old girl, according to officials. It comes as Ukraine says it's repelling constant attacks in the eastern Donbas region by Russian mercenaries. In the frontline town of Siversk, servicemen are using the freezing temperatures and snowfall to help track Russian movements.
The current weather conditions mean the enemy won't conduct any offensive actions. They try to hide their movements in the very front lines. So we are conducting constant air reconnaissance to fire on them with our artillery.
In his nightly video address on Sunday, President Volodymyr Zelensky denounced what he called Russia's failure to observe a ceasefire it had declared for Russian Orthodox Christmas. Ukraine never agreed to the ceasefire, calling it a Russian excuse to reinforce troops. Both sides accused the other of continuing hostilities throughout the period. As Moscow's invasion of Ukraine grinds towards the one-year mark, Russia's military is under pressure at home to deliver battlefield successes. On Sunday, it said a missile strike on Kramatorsk had killed 600 Ukrainian soldiers. But a Reuters reporter found no visible signs of casualties at the scene of the attack, billed by Moscow as revenge for a New Year's attack that killed scores of Russian soldiers.
That's Reuters' Olivia Zolino reporting. We'll find out about the new controversial media law in Ukraine later in the show. Now, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Tuesday that Russia was mobilizing more troops for the war in Ukraine and should not be underestimated. Speaking at a news conference with EU leaders Ursula von der Leyen and Charles Michel, Stoltenberg called on members of the military alliance and the EU to be prepared.
The aim is, of course, to ensure that we can continue and also strengthen our support to Ukraine, because we have seen that Russia has suffered big losses in Ukraine due to the brave Ukrainian soldiers and the professionalism and the dedication of the Ukrainian armed forces. But we should not underestimate Russia. They are mobilizing more troops. They are working hard to acquire more equipment, more ammunition, and they have shown a willingness to actually suffer but continue the war. And there is no indication that President Putin has changed the overall aim of his brutal war against Ukraine. So we need to be prepared for the long haul.
Von der Leyen said the European Union would impose new sanctions on Belarus as it keeps up the pressure on Moscow to end the conflict and extend measures to those countries that support Russia. In response to a question about the supply of Western battle tanks, including sending the Leopard 2 to Ukraine, she said Ukrainians would get all the necessary military equipment they need. Stoltenberg said he welcomed the decision by NATO members, Germany, France, and the United States to provide military vehicles. Charles Michel is European Council President.
Russia's war against Ukraine has had two unintended consequences. It has strengthened both our organization, the EU, and NATO, and it has brought us closer together.
Stoltenberg also addressed the strengthening of the NATO-EU partnership.
We are determined to take the partnership between NATO and the European Union to the next level, to address in particular the growing geostrategic competition, resilience issues, and the protection of critical infrastructures, as well as emerging and disruptive technologies, space, the security implications of climate change, foreign interference, and information manipulation.
Russia launched what it calls a special military operation in Ukraine on February 24th of last year, citing threats to its own security and a need to protect Russian language speakers. Ukraine and its allies accuse Moscow of an unprovoked war to seize territory. We're going to meet someone who walks around Ukraine looking for landmines in a few minutes. First, though, as fighting intensifies in Bakhmut, we turn to Anna Chernikova for the latest from Kyiv.
Today, we should not only talk about Bakhmut, but we should also talk about a little city next to Bakhmut. It's around 20 kilometers from Bakhmut. It's called Soledar. This city has a very strategic meaning in this particular battle for Bakhmut. So this little town provides possibility for supplies and provides possibility for creating new assaults and new advances for both sides. And both Ukrainian forces and Russian forces are interested in having this city under control. Actually, Russian forces, it looks like that they've changed their tactics and they are trying now to surround the city of Bakhmut going from the side of Soledar. And what is also very important to understand is that this Soledar city is a place where where very long salt mines are located. So this city, little city, is famous in Ukraine for the production of salt. And these mines, basically, they are, well, they're kind of like 100 kilometers long, and they could be also used by both Ukrainian and Russian forces as you know, kind of this hidden passes deep into the territory and kind of like creating the surrounding opportunities. So basically now what we're seeing and what we hear from soldiers from the side, from the city of Soledar and Bakhmut, that actually extremely heavy fightings are happening around Soledar right now. According to British intelligence, and also this is confirmed by some Ukrainian military correspondents who are currently located there in that area, that actually Russian forces managed to advance advance in the city of Soledar and take control of some big part of the city. However, Russian forces still do not control the whole city.
And a Pentagon official described the fighting in and around Bakhmut as absolutely savage. Are you getting any casualty reports from the Ukrainian authorities?
No, but President Zelensky, in his latest evening speech, also confirmed that what is happening there is just something insane, and amount of people that have already died there from both sides is really huge, but particularly from Russian side, because Russians are attacking and Russians are using just, and this not only, again, not only confirmed by President Zelensky, but also by Ukrainian military, that Russian forces basically use waves of manpower. So they have kind of like attack and then another wave of attack. So new people coming and really huge amount of people have been already killed there. But it's difficult to say for the moment how many casualties and how many people have died, because fighting's just going on nonstop, and even some Ukrainian soldiers report that the guns, the equipment is so hot because of this intensive fighting that sometimes equipment stop working because of overheating. So for the moment, it's really difficult to say final numbers, or at least preliminary numbers.
And Anna, one final question for you today. What's the mood like among the citizens in Kyiv and in other cities to the west of Ukraine that are a little farther away from the fighting? They're aware of what's going on. Are they upset by it? Is it affecting daily life at all?
People expect that heavy fightings would be happening, and people understand that heavy fightings would continue because, all this for the past couple of months, every day there is this open source information for the society about what's going on in Bakhmut, and of course people also feel that certain intensifying movements started to happen recently. So I cannot say that people are upset particularly because this happened, because they didn't expect it. Of course, in general, they upset that they're that Ukrainian soldiers are dying and that this is happening, but it's not something that took them by surprise. People knew that this is happening, and people understood that some intensifying fighting can start right now after the new years.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You are listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. On December 29th, President Volodymyr Zelensky signed a new law that gives the Ukrainian government more power and control over the media. And it's not just the content of the law itself, it's the way in which it was passed that has many free press advocates saying that this law is antithetical to the democratic ideals that Zelensky purports to be defending in his fight against Russia. For more information, I spoke with Gulnoza Said, Europe and Central Asia Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists.
Well, the draft law has been there since 2019, but last year when there were first signals and conversations about Ukraine potentially joining the European Union, obviously the authorities in Ukraine started working with the EU institutions trying to meet the requirements of the EU, which are usually very specific, and one of those requirements is to reform or change the media environment in the country. So they took the old draft of the law and they changed it in a way, they changed it so it would meet the EU requirements, but the way it was done and also certain articles in the new bill are not as media friendly as we would expect them to be.
So it seems to me that most of the countries in the EU are, relatively speaking, liberal democracies. Freedom of press is something that would be appreciated in the EU, you know, writ large. How would crafting a media law that restricts a free press be something Ukraine needs to do to gain admission to the EU?
You know, I'm surprised to see very little reaction from the EU institutions and European governments in regards to this law, because I think, and I would expect to see more criticism, but it may be because there is this overwhelming support of Ukraine in the West, particularly in Europe, and there is maybe a certain grace period that they give to Ukraine in order to improve its record, or maybe there is a lack of awareness that this bill is going to stay there and to be implemented for many years to come. And if it's not Zelensky, then the next president may have authoritarian tendencies, as we've seen in the past of Ukraine, a very recent past, as you know. So that's why we at CPJ have published statements calling on, first of all, on the Ukrainian authorities to not adopt this bill, but also would like to draw the attention of the European governments to this law, because I don't think they want to accept to the EU the country that where there are risks to press freedom.
So what in the law specifically is it that groups like yours and the other media watchdogs out there have problems with? What's the problem with this? What's the worry?
So the worst part is that there is going to be practically a government body. It's not called a government body, but it's called a National Council. But the members of the National Council will be appointed by the president of Ukraine and by the parliament of Ukraine. So practically, they are going to be political appointees. And if you have a presidential party having a majority in the parliament, then you will practically have one party and one person appointing all members of the council. So that already makes this council a government agency.
And what is that council? What will that council do? Why is this scary?
It will oversee all media outlets, including online.
So if the president doesn't like an article on your website, what can happen?
Well, there will be this rule of three strikes, but it also includes fines. And the council will be able to fine a media outlet without a court order. That's our concern.
How bad is this law when compared to some of the others? Is this something that we, you know, given all that is happening in the world, especially in Ukraine, is this that big a deal?
Look, first of all, I think it was possible, and this is what we, you know, this position is shared by, you know, some Ukrainian journalists and press freedom advocates share this position with us. It was not necessary to adopt the extensive bill in its current form, because everyone, including journalists and press freedom advocates in Ukraine, needed more time to discuss, to look at the law. And also, it was possible, in order to meet the EU requirements, it was possible to adopt a shorter version, a very, let me say, a summary of the law, which would meet the EU requirements and will allow Ukraine to move the process of joining the Union eventually, without really putting the detailed amendments to the legislation, which are controversial. So I think the only reason the Ukrainian authorities decided to go ahead with digging up the old draft and adopting it and signing it into law is exactly because they are trying to control the free flow of information. We have seen many attempts of that before the full-scale invasion of Russia and since then. And it's not just the legislation that was adopted, but, you know, the attempts to strip certain journalists of their accreditation, to report from war zones, that we also at CPJ expressed concern over, and so on and so forth.
Gulnoza Said is Europe and Central Asia Project Coordinator with the Committee to Protect Journalists. Ms. Said, thank you so much for your time and for your analysis today.
Thank you.
Think your job is tough? Ryan Hendrickson has retired from the U.S. Army, and today he's in Ukraine, helping clear landmines and keep civilians safe. For VOA, La Mermishvili has this report.
Boom. Found it. I hate that sound. I dream about this sound.
Ryan Hendrickson is a retired Green Beret, a Special Forces unit of the U.S. Army. These days, however, he's working in Ukraine, helping to clear mines left in local fields by retreating Russian forces. The U.S. veteran says after 8 combat deployments to Afghanistan, he felt compelled to do humanitarian work to help Ukraine. So he started his own nonprofit demining group called Tip of the Spear Landmine Removal and has been going back and forth to Ukraine and fundraising for almost a year.
When I came over to Ukraine in March, and then April, May timeframe, you started hearing a lot about civilians and kids getting injured and killed from landmines, clusters, booby traps, and stuff like that. And it really brought it back to me, you know, the pain and everything that I went through and what I saw in Afghanistan that those kids went through, because it's mainly the kids that, you know, is really, really why I do what I do.
He says mines have been found on roads and fields, inside apartments and in kitchen cabinets.
Ukraine is the most contaminated country in the world. And for this moment, we have more than 200,000 square kilometers, which is not checked yet and not demined. And this is just about liberated territories. We still have a lot of occupied territories and we are not count right now them.
Experts say 10 to 30% of Russian munitions never explode, making liberating territories of Ukraine extremely dangerous for civilians. Minesweepers mostly look for cluster bombs and road mines. So far, officials say hundreds of thousands of mines have been cleared in Ukraine. But Ukrainian authorities say the mining process will last for at least 7 years after the war is over. So the main priority for minesweepers like Hendrickson is to make sure civilians are safe. The U.S. is trying to help as well. U.S. State Department has allocated almost $90 million for demining purposes in Ukraine, including training and modern equipment. There are some 200 demining brigades in Ukraine, each consisting of 5 people. By early 2024, Ukraine hopes to double this number. Hendrickson does not plan to stop either. He divides his time between the U.S. and Ukraine, coming back to America just to raise funds to buy more gear for minesweepers, and then returning to Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, ZTC.